Hey everybody, we are back with .NET Conf Focus on Blazor. We have my good friend, Jeremy Lignis, joining us all the way from the UK. If he were to be on campus, he would literally be standing right next to me, but because of the magic of the internet and technology, we were able to make it work out this way. So Jeremy, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to speak to us about state management in Blazor. What's going on with this?
It's my pleasure. Very, very excited. I finally got to visit a UK office. I'm at the Microsoft Scale-Up, which is underneath the reactor here. And I've got some good tidbits. I think people will be excited to hear the information I have to share.
Perfect. All right, let's get started.
All right, sounds good. Let me go ahead and share my screen. Let's get over to the presentation. Start sharing. And we're going to pop over here. All right, looking good. As we said, all right, fantastic. Well, we are talking today about state management in Blazor apps. My name is Jeremy Lignis. I'm a cloud advocate with Microsoft, and I'm excited to share some tips, tricks, techniques, and solutions for you today. But before I get started, I want to set the stage for what we're going to talk about. So imagine just for a second that you're filling out the world's longest online form. And I know everyone's run into this. You've got dozens and dozens of fields. You've filled out your name, your birth date, the last 7 cities you visited, tons of information. You go to click the submit button. All right, so everything's looking fine. We're good to go. Something disconnected. And you get that message that you're offline. No problem, right? So you're going to try to get back into your form. Unfortunately, you're forced to start over. That form's clear. You hit the back button, there's nothing there. That is not a great experience. In fact, users having that experience are going to throw the website in the trash can, figuratively, of course. So what we want to talk about is how we address this problem of managing state with inside Blazor apps. And the first thing I'm going to focus on is, what do I mean when I talk about state? What is state inside a Blazor application? And it's really 3 key pieces of information that are part of that experience the user has on your website. The first is the HTML or the UI. This is literally the elements that are being retained in your browser. It's the document object model or the DOM and all of that information. Now, the UI is something that can usually be rebuilt from information, but it's important as a user, if I navigate away and come back to a page and I'm expecting there to be a seamless experience, that that is a consistent piece of state that I'm presented with. The other is, of course, the fields and properties. It's the data that makes up your form, and it's not just the data output that you're showing, but it's the data being input by the hardworking user who's trying to get that information over the line to you. And then it's also the services. The beautiful thing about Blazor apps is they can register and run different services, and we want the state of those services to be consistent so that we don't have side effects or strange behaviors when we come back into the site. Now, as people working with Blazor know, there are 2 different Blazor flavors, if you will. And the first one is Blazor WebAssembly. This is the client-side Blazor. This is what is still in preview, but it is that Blazor that runs completely inside your browser. When you're running Blazor WebAssembly, the state of your application is retained inside the browser's memory. That's the HTML, DOM, and code. Unfortunately, because it's inside the browser's memory, if you force a refresh on the page, or if you navigate away from that page, that's going to destroy that state and remove it from memory. So I want to give you a quick example of what that looks like, and then we'll go on to the other flavor of Blazor. Everything that I'm going to show you is inside of this repo. Don't worry, I'll share the link later on. That's this Blazor state repo. But what we're going to do is launch the client-side version of this. And what I did is I took an application that I built way back in the Angular days. I took an AngularJS application, if you remember those days, and I ported that to the newer version of Angular. And then when Blazor came out, I ported it to Blazor so that users and developers could see the experience and compare and contrast. This is a very simple health form. You enter some information. I'm going to put in some fictional info here. We've just entered a height. I'm going to enter a fictional weight. And it's going to update some of these fields, and it's giving me my body mass index and some other information. If I navigate within the application, so I'm clicking on this navigation, you can see it consistently shows the results. We've got the same results here. However, let's refresh the page. I'm just going to force a refresh, and we lost the information. So that's one issue right there. Let's put this information back in. And I'm going to enter that same weight, but this time instead of clicking on the navigation, I'm going to force a navigation by typing it into my URL bar. And again, I lose that information. So that's not a great experience. That is client-side Blazor. Next thing I want to look at is server-side Blazor. In server-side Blazor, although you do have some state in the browser, most of that state is retained on the server. And it's retained in something that we call circuits, which is a signal R term, but it's basically think of a sandbox for every session that's connected to that Blazor server. So it's in the server's memory, and because the server is maintaining that circuit, if you refresh, force a refresh, or you navigate, it will retain that. That's in the server's memory. It's taken over for you. However, if that server goes down and it disconnects, when you reconnect, by default, that's going to go away. Let's take a look at the server-side example. I'm going to go ahead and close the client example. We're going to switch to Blazor State Server, set that as our startup project, and launch that. And we're going to see an identical form, and I think you'll find the way this is architected is pretty interesting. We'll get into that in a second. I'm going to go ahead and put the same information, 5'9", winter 205 pounds. We're going to navigate to results, back to home. That looks good. Let's force a refresh. I'm just going to refresh my web page. And that refresh happened so fast you might not have seen it, but the server maintained that state. I'm going to manually navigate to results, and again, it's maintained that. So that's great. That's a good behavior. But if I open up my IIS Express and I stop the site, I get this disconnection. Let's go ahead and quickly bring that server back up. Well, the server rebooted, so of course it's no longer maintaining state. We go back to the default. If I go to this tab and I reload, I'm back to where I started. This is the experience that we're trying to avoid. Let me close these and come back. So before I dive into the solutions, what I tried to package up for you is a set of solutions that will impact your code base as minimally as possible. No one wants to have to write duplicate code in every component, in every page that they add to a site. We would much prefer to have some sort of service that handles the state for us. Unfortunately, we can do that. I took an approach of lowest common denominator. I try to build libraries so that the libraries are as shareable as possible. So at the bottom of this, I have a view model that manages the health information. We can look at this project, Blazor State View Model. If we look at the project file, you can see this is just a .NET Standard 2.0 project. So this can be shared across .NET projects, whether it's a WPF project, it could be a Xamarin application, or in this case, it's a Blazor application. That's the view model piece of this. And I'm showing that here. We've got our WPF, our UWP Xamarin. The next step up, one of the things I love about the architecture of Blazor is the support for Razor class libraries. Razor class libraries are, again, they're .NET Standard 2.0 libraries, but they can contain view information, JavaScript images, and CSS that are referenceable from other Blazor projects. So if you're sharing things across multiple projects, you can use that, even server and client projects. So if we look at Blazor State Shared, we can see, for example, I'm just going to open up this age component. This component is shared across the Blazor server and the Blazor client solutions that I showed you. It's got some HTML markup. We've got age. We've got some calculations going on here. I'm probably not using Jimmy's CSS styling to do the best practice for how I'm handling the validations, but that's okay. This is a very simple validation. If we look at the code, it's basically pulling in information from that view model, and then it's checking for a range. So if the age is outside of a range, it's setting an error state so that we have a flag and everything else. But the nice thing about it is I write this component once, and that component can be shared between the server and the client. This also is using this health model base. If we look at health model base, what I've done is I've injected the view model into this base class. And then after render, I'm opting into property change notification. Now, this isn't necessary for state management. I chose to use the model view model pattern. Blazor doesn't have an opinion of what framework that you use. You're welcome to use whatever. Because I'm using the view model pattern, I can have this base component that basically tells Blazor whenever the view model changes. That's what we're doing here. Anytime some input changes, we inform Blazor and it's able to re-render and update the UI as you saw in real time. So that's what this does. And this is shared if we look at our server project and we look at our dependencies and go into projects, you can see that what this is using is the view model and that shared. If we go into our client project, let me close this, come back down to the WebAssembly project, open up dependencies, you can see it's using that same project. So that's that next tier that we're using here. I just made a rhyme and I wasn't expecting to. But that's the Blazor and the WebAssembly. So now we know how this demo was architected. Let's talk a little bit about solutions. So there's several approaches to managing state in the Blazor application. It may seem obvious, but it is not so obvious to everyone that service registration is one way to maintain state. And it's sort of the first one I want to focus on. And that's using the services to configure services. And what do I mean by that? Because I just said everything's in memory or in that circuit on the server. Why do I care about this when I'm talking about state management? Well, if we come over to this screen, what I've done is just done a file new Blazor project. Just create a simple client-side project. I didn't customize it. This is the out-of-the-box template. And it comes with this convenient counter. It's got some great examples of fetching data, of navigation, and of using a counter. I've got this running. Let's go ahead and launch it. I actually had it on another web page. That's fine. Now, if we look at the counter, out of the box, we have this functionality. We can click it, and that's great. I'm going to go to my home page. I'm going to come back to the counter. And notice that the count reset to 0. Why is that? Why did that count reset to 0? It's because the count is a property on the component, and it's scoped to the lifecycle of this component. When I navigate away and the component goes away, when I come back, it creates a new copy, and that component gets initialized with that 0 value. Let's address this with a service. This is the first step into managing some state in our project. I'm going to create a new class. So I'm just going to do add class. And I'm very creative with my naming, so I'm going to call this counter service. You can see where I'm going here. This is going to expose account property. And because I want the service to really manage this, I'm going to give it a private setter. And instead of directly manipulating the count, we're going to expose a method called increment that just adds one to the count. Very simple service. I'm going to use my favorite feature here. Remove unnecessary usings. Make a nice clean class. So we've got a class. Now we need to use that class. We're going to come into startup right here. And we're going to configure it as a service. Now, typically what we would do is we would create a singleton. I'm sorry, we would create an interface and have an implementation for that interface. because I'm making a very simple demo here, I'm not going to take the time to add that interface. So I'm going to tell it the counter service is the signature and counter service is the implementation. But that provides one copy of that service throughout the application. And if you notice, my background suddenly got dark. I don't know if I need to wave my arms or run around, but we've got some energy saving things going on here, but it's quite all right as long as I'm still connected to the internet, right? So let's go back to our counter class and let's use the service. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to ask it to inject the service. So I would like a copy of the counter service, and let's just call it SVC for short. So now I'm going to let the Blazor framework hand off this copy of the component for me. Now I can reference that component, or that service, I should say. So instead of using the count on the component, I'm going to use a count on the service. And I have my full IntelliSense. Everything's working out fine there. On this click event, instead of calling the component's increment count, I'm going to call increment on the service itself. And now I don't even need this code behind because everything's handled by the service for me. This is live coding at its best. What could possibly go wrong? Let's just run this and see what happens. I'm building it right now. And you know this trick, right? If it's taking a little long, we just move the mouse clockwise to speed up the build. And look at that. It worked. We're loading and we're inside the application. Let's go to our counter. Make sure it still works like it did before. Great. We can click, click, click. We're going to navigate away. Come back to it, and it's retained that count of 9. So that's what I mean when I'm referring to service registration. It's an important first step to be able to handle state within your application. Now there's another approach, and that's the demo making the counter count. There's another approach of encoding data in the URL. I'm not going to spend too much time on this because I think URLs make more sense as navigation rather than state, but you can set up properties in your route and you can set up parameters that get passed into a component and you can have the URL encode some of that information. Again, I believe this makes much more sense when you're approaching it from the perspective of navigation. Where am I in my application? But that's also an option for you. Next thing we're going to look at is the browser's own cache. Modern browsers, especially the ones that support WebAssembly, have built-in options for a cache. Here you're seeing an example of the local storage API. And local storage is local to a site. This will be a cache that exists for my domain, for my URL. There's also session storage, which, as you would suspect, is scoped to a session. That means if I open a new tab, navigate to the same site, it gets its own copy of that cache. And depending on the functionality you're trying to capture, the type of state management you want, you can either use local storage or session storage. I'm going to show the example with local storage. First thing we'll do is actually take a look at the application. Down here, I've got a project called WASM Local. I'm going to set that as my startup project. And I'll run it to show you what the functionality looks like. And this will probably look very familiar to you. You've seen this application somewhere before. But notice that it's already pre-populated some values. I'm going to go ahead and change those to keep the example consistent. Bring this up to 5'9", take this to 205. And then I'm going to go to the results. You can see that is consistent. I will force a refresh. And it still retained those same values. Now we're getting somewhere. I'm going to force the navigation here to results. And it's preserved that value. Before I crack open the lid and go behind the scenes, I want to show you another example. Because the solution that I'm proposing will work for client-side WebAssembly Blazor as well as server-side. So let's set that server-side as the startup project. Let's launch into some code. And again, you can see this has come pre-populated. Let's queue up our consistent values here that I've been using. Take this to 205, navigate to results. Now, before I showed you that with the server side, those circuits maintain state. So if I refresh or force a navigation, then the results go away. But what happened is when I came here and I went into IIS Express and I disconnected the server, in this case by stopping it, we get this disconnect. Let's go ahead and launch it again. First thing I want you to see is this new tab that launched came in with our existing values. There's the 5'9", there's the 205. And the results are consistent. If I come back to this one and I reload the page, it also reloads. So now we've solved the problem. How did we do this? If I open up my developer tools, I'll give you some insights. I'm going into application, and I've navigated to local storage. Notice there's session storage, I talked about that. We're looking at local storage, and we've got this health model, which is just a JSON serialized version of our view model. If we come down here, it will expand it out and give us the different values. Now, I'm not gonna be able to zoom and change it at the same time, but if you just take a look at the bottom part of your screen, while I change these values, I'm gonna drop an inch off the height here. And we can see this change to 31.2, 1900. If we add that inch back on, we got 30.3 and 1913. So adding an inch of height for a male will add 13 calories to the basal metabolic rate, in case you were wondering. How did we do this? Let's go back into our code. Now, I implemented this in the shared project. So this is one solution, works for server side or client side, can be shared across projects. And the key to this is inside a storage helper. Before I go into the storage helper, I want to show you how we share assets across Blazor projects. In wwwroot, let's get into the right project. In wwwroot, I don't know why it keeps bouncing around like that. Let me zoom in. I have a style sheet, and I have this state management.javascript. If I open the state management JavaScript file, it should look pretty familiar. This is what I showed you on the slide. It's just that local storage. In my Blazor server local project, there's a host.cshtml. This is the host file for server-side Blazor. You can see here I've included a style sheet, and the convention is underscore content, the name of the assembly, and the path to the resource. The change from the previous example is that I also added this JavaScript, so it's available to the server-side Blazor. The client-side Blazor is going to look very, very similar. Instead of the host.cshtml, if we go into this WASM local and we go into wwwroot, there's an index.html in that client-side Blazor project. This is the host for client-side Blazor. If we look at this, though, the convention is the same. It's underscore content, name of the assembly, and the path to the JavaScript. So very, very easy way to add this. The other thing that I did was I created a Razor view, a reusable component called Storage Helper. There's a few things going on in Storage Helper, so I'm going to step through this. We've got some using statements. We're injecting this IJS runtime. This is an interface for JavaScript interop. And it's great that Blazor's provided us an interface, because then if we're doing unit testing, we can mock that interface and not have to have it active within a browser for those tests to work. So we've got that interface coming in. We also have the view model interface. This is the interface for the view model being injected as model. I've got a template here that says, if everything's loaded, render the child content. Otherwise, show this text of loading. That happened so quickly that you probably didn't see the loading. You saw the Blazor loading, but not the component loading. But that's okay. If we had a slower connection, this would make it a better user experience. We'd probably have a progress indicator, et cetera. So we're tracking, has it loaded? Is it deserializing? If you look at this parameter, this render fragment of child content, this is the convention that you use in Blazor to have a component that can wrap other components. Simply by exposing this parameter as a render fragment, Blazor understands that there's going to be content inside this component that it should also parse and render, etc. That's just a convention that it uses. Here's where the interesting things start to happen. When this component's initialized, we're calling the JavaScript runtime, invoking it asynchronously, and we're asking it to call this load method with a parameter, which is just the name of the health model. If we go back to our state management JavaScript, state manager is sort of the namespace we've created. It's an object on the global window, and load is the function that just returns the value from storage. That's all this is doing, is grabbing it. Now, there's a reason why I have this in a try-catch block, and I'm catching invalid operation exception. Client-side Blazor, this is going to work every time. Once that component's initialized, it'll call JavaScript, it'll pull from local storage, we're good to go. On server-side Blazor, the rendering process is two-step. There's a server-side render that gets everything ready and emits the HTML to the client. Then there's another client-side path that takes care of anything that needs that HTML DOM to be active. I'm catching this so that on the server-side render, when JavaScript's not available, when it throws that exception, I just say that's fine. We'll catch it on the client side. On the client side, this will go through. If we get that deserialized value, we deserialize it using the built-in JSON serializer. So we're just deserializing the health model. And if we get that deserialized value, we set this flag and we move the values over. So we've got this copy. Remember, this, the view model variable is what I deserialized up here. The model with capital M is the view model being used throughout my application. So I'm moving it from what I deserialized over. The reason why I'm using this flag is because of what happens down here. When the model property changes, if it's deserializing, we return. Otherwise, we serialize it to storage. Basically, what this does is it says anytime some property on the view model mutates, update the copy that we have in the cache. Now, this will happen anytime something changes, but you can set your preferences how you want. For example, if you want a batch update, if you want to capture a few changes, or even wait for a period of time, however you want to handle this. In my case, anytime it changes, I'm serializing it out. If I did this without the flag, just updating the model would get us into an endless loop, because I would deserialize, I would update it to the model, that would trigger a property change, the property change would serialize it, and we'd go back and forth. So I have this flag so it knows that, hey, I'm taking care of moving it from storage, now you're fine. Otherwise, capture those changes. Now, this is one component. Again, all this component does is it interops with JavaScript to serialize that JSON, and it taps into that property change notification. If we look at the way we pull it into our application, again, something I love about Blazor, the way components work, is if we look at our server local, we have app.razor. This is where our router exists, and we just wrap the router in that storage helper. Just one place in the application, now it's automatically handled throughout the application for us. I don't have to do any other changes to code. Interestingly enough, if we come to our client-side project and we look at app.razor, you're going to see the exact same. So I'm using the component from a shared library the exact same way to manage that state. The only other caveat I'll share before I move on to another method is obviously this is taking place in plain text. if you have sensitive information, then you're going to want to take some extra steps, either store it on the server, which we're going to talk about next, or encrypt it. Fortunately, there are a few ways that you can encrypt this. There is a data protection services package that you can bring into your application that's provided by Microsoft that you can use to encrypt and decrypt data. So if you have sensitive data, want to protect it one layer, there's a fairly straightforward API to do that. However, there's also a Blazor component that's in experimental preview right now, but it's a Blazor storage component that wraps all of this functionality for you and does the encryption and decryption. So that's another option that you can look into as well. And all of this documentation is available on the GitHub repo, by the way. So I'm going to step out of this and talk about server-side persistence. Now, when we look at server-side persistence, this should not be unfamiliar. This is a typical interior application. And the model that we follow a lot of times in the web is we have our client that's running inside of the browser, and it's using APIs to reach out to a server, and that server is managing information. It might be using a SQL database, a NoSQL database, Cosmos DB, Azure SQL, whatever that is, that's being handled and marshaled back and forth by an API. We're used to writing applications that have very explicit interactions with APIs, so that I click the save button and it's explicitly going out calling a save API. But there's no reason why we can't automate that to manage our state as well. What I'm going to do is jump into this. Now, I've already demonstrated that this will work consistently for server side and client side. So I'm just going to use the client model. What I did here is I created a project that's a Blazor WebAssembly project. But in this case, I ticked that little box that said ASP.NET Core hosted. So what it did is it created the project that creates the static assets for the Blazor client, but it also created a host so that I can stand up APIs and controllers. And in this host, I happen to have a state controller. The state controller is where you would do something like use a Redis cache or use SQL or use NoSQL or whatever persistence mechanism of your choice. In my case, to keep the demo simple, I'm just storing it in memory. I have a static dictionary. I'm not doing any, you know, concurrent dictionary or anything like that. There's a lot of practices for production that you would want to look into. But to keep the demo simple, this exposes a Git endpoint. And the Git endpoint is, I'm cheating a little bit and just getting the IP address that the Git's coming from and returning the model from the cache. And then there is a post of a view model that stores it in the cache. I'm using the IP address because I don't have any authentication wrapped around this project, again, to keep it simple. You would probably have a user login authenticate, and you would be using that user ID or information as a key to store this. But this is as straightforward as we can get on a controller. On this endpoint, I can post a view model to it, and I can get a view model from it. Again, in my shared project, so I can reuse the code across Blazor projects, even if they're server-side or client-side, I created a state service. This state service gets a copy of the view model. This time I'm using constructor injection instead of property injection. It's getting a view model, it's getting this state service config option, and it's getting a copy of the HTTP client. Why would I inject the HTTP client? This is an important step. If we're using the HTTP client in Blazor WebAssembly, there's a special configured version of the client that understands how to work inside the browser sandbox. You never want a new HTTP client in client-side Blazor WebAssembly. You want to have that injected so you get the appropriate copy. On the server side, I'm assuming it just injects a fresh copy of the HTTP client. What we're doing is we're saving those values. And once again, because I'm using the NVVM pattern, I'm plugging into property change notification. If you were to use some other tool like Redux for state management, you would plug into your actions in Redux and do something similar. So there's an approach, there's some hook that happens when the state mutates, and that's what you plug into. I'm exposing this initialization method that's calling the endpoint. This is just using the HTTP client, saying get that endpoint with a URL that's passed in through configuration, deserializing it, moving it over. And then on the property change notification, it's posting it out. So this is doing a server post instead of a client cache. That's pretty much it for the details of how this is working. If I go into my project and I look at my startup, what I've done here in my startup is I've implemented this configuration service so I can inject the URL endpoint. Here again, bad practice, I'm hard coding it. You would use whatever configuration approach you want to dynamically pass in what that endpoint's going to be, but I need some way to pass that endpoint into the service. And then I'm adding the view model, adding the service configuration, adding the state service. The other thing that I have to do is I'll automatically handle property change notification, but I need to handle that initial load the first time you go into the application. So what I'm doing is in my pages, when I route to a page, when that page is initialized, I'm calling initialize on the service. Let's go ahead and set the server as my startup project and run this. Okay, so we're in our default. Now I'm going to add in that wait, and I'm going to go ahead and force a refresh. And you can see it populated. I accidentally put 295 instead of 205. And if I force that navigation to results, we get a consistent result in results. And I'm just going to show you one more thing. If I open up my network and I change a property, you can see it's making these calls to state. It's dynamically posting the update. And then when I refresh, it's calling it back. So that's a way of handling server side. Again, you could throttle it. You could have some checkpoint to save it, et cetera, however you like. So to recap what we covered, we could do nothing and have a terrible user experience. We can store it in memory, which is recommended so that your services are consistent. This will last as long as the session or the connection is there. We can do it on the client side with the cache and the storage that's available there. And then we can use the server side, and we have examples for these. All of these examples are in this GitHub repo, github.com, Jeremy Lickness, which is also my Twitter, Blazor State, that also has links to the official Microsoft documentation for state management, as well as some other tips and tricks for you. So having said that, I think we have a few more minutes left. I'd like to open it up for questions.
Hey, Jeremy. Yes, we do have a couple questions that our viewers have been asking via Twitter. The first question is, I was wondering if Blazor component automatically refreshes when a property is injected service or view model changes, or if we have to subscribe to its property change event and call state has changed?
That's a great question, and that's why I wanted to emphasize that the state management for Blazor, change management for Blazor is opt-in. It's not assumed. So if you're using an MVVM pattern, Blazor can make some assumptions. If a property on a component changes, it knows it has to re-render it. But if you're binding to a view model, there's no real way Blazor knows that view model. It doesn't have automatic detection that says it's using property change notification. So that's why I use that base view model to plug into the property change notification and call state has changed. So there is a way to inherit so that you only have to do that in one place. You don't have to duplicate that code across your components. But you do need some mechanism to tell Blazor that, yes, our data is mutated and you should update by calling state has changed.
Perfect. That's a great answer. So Beth has another question up for us. Let's see. Is it possible to have the app reconnect automatically without requiring the user to reload the page after you make any changes?
Right now, I believe that there's a timeout that's set, and then what it's going to do is if the server comes up within that designated period, it's going to auto-reconnect. So if it was just a glitch where a packet was lost or the server was down briefly, but once that timeout expires, it does force a manual reload. I suspect that there's an approach. I'm not as familiar with server-side Blazor. Let me add that caveat. I focused mostly on client-side Blazor, but I suspect if there's not something out of the box, that there's some code that you can write in JavaScript, for example, that says after a period of time, poll for that connection and try that again.
Perfect. That's a great answer. I think we got another one up that we have here. Perfect. Are there any current libraries for handling state? I've heard of one called Blazor State. Do you know anybody that's creating something that's reusable for people to just kind of plop into their applications?
The main one that I'm aware of, because I believe it's referenced in the Microsoft documentation, is the Blazor State. And the nice thing about that component is it doesn't force you to call JavaScript directly the way that I showed in my simple example. It provides an actual service for state management, and it does have the data protection services built in, so it's handling encryption for you. So that's a great one to look out for. I am not familiar with other out-of-the-box solutions, but it is a common problem to solve, so I wouldn't be surprised if they exist.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Jeremy, for taking the time out of your evening to talk to us. We really appreciate everything you presented for us. And that's it.